Like a dolphin, you know, like a mammal, a sea mammal. You know, like Flipper.
Welcome to the Working Hands Podcast. I'm Tony of Woodland Iron, joined by Keith of Blackthorn Concepts. And tonight we have a guest, Mark Adams of Mark Adams Pictures. What's going
What's
on?
What's going on?
Hey, guys.
So we'd like to start the episode off by thanking our sponsors. I'll take the time to thank Sabretooth. If you go to sabretooth.com, you could save 10% on your burrs by using code WH. Get in those Christmas orders. Order some for the maker in your world.
And I'll take a moment to thank our sponsor, Maritime Knife Supply, your one-stop shop for makers. Your home for abrasives, steels, tools, and more. Save on shipping and get everything from one supplier. You can find him at maritimeknifesupply.com and .ca.
So if you don't already know who Mark Adams is, you've seen his photography on any maker's page who's ever been to Maker Camp. He's the guy who does the black and white photos that everyone reposts. That is who we're sitting with. We're graced with this evening.
No.
How are you, Mark?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for all the begging and pleading to get on the podcast. So thanks for finally getting me on.
Yeah, we've been trying for years. You kept putting us off, but now we got you on.
Yeah.
That's how you been?
Good. Yeah, just because I split my time between Cleveland and Portland, and I just actually flew from Portland to Cleveland, and this is Sunday, and Thursday I shot portraits in Portland for the second time. So there was a maker holiday event there at Migration Brewing. And so there's probably 40 different makers there. And I figured, you know, I shot them at Makers Camp and I might as well bring it to the West Coast. Since I'm in Portland all the time, I'd like to connect with that community and anybody on the West Coast. So spent a couple hours doing portraits and had a great time with everybody.
A lot of duplicates from Maker Camp or no?
No, not really. I don't think the only person, Andrew Stanfield, who was at Maker Camp this year and then also last year. Last year was his first year, and so this year was his second year, so he's an old pro.
Nice.
And I'm trying to get the Portland makers to get a group together and like rent an Airbnb so they'll have like, you know, 20 different Portland makers coming and hang out there.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But there's a great group of people, lots of people doing some really great work out there. You've got Portland Ironworks, who's making forging axes and hammers and stuff. So he's got a really, really cool shop. And a couple weeks ago, he actually did a hammer in there. So had like 10, 15 people there doing hammering and just, you know, bottle openers and different kinds of little rail tomahawks. So like, you know, like the railroad spike tomahawks.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah.
You didn't go to that though, did you?
No, I actually that was the first time I shot pictures of the makers because I visited his shop maybe 8 months ago because I had a free week and I DM'd him. I'm like, hey, can I swing by your shop and take some shop pictures? Because I haven't really had much of a chance to visit anybody's shop to kind of see how they're working in the space they're fitting it in. And so I went over to hang out with him for like half a day and kind of moved around his lighting a little bit to make it when he shoots his videos and things, so it looked a little bit better for him. And he was kind enough to give me an axe for that. So that was pretty sweet. So now I've got one of his axes up on my mantle.
Awesome.
Nice.
So then he DM'd me and said he was having a hammer in. So today I'll come up and I'll set it up. And it was probably 30 degrees outside and I'd set up like in his driveway. And so if you stepped away from the fire pit of the forge, it was freezing. So shot maybe 10 or 14 makers there that night and then another, you know, 20 or 30 new ones. And there were a lot of repeats that came into this event too at the holiday party, but that was much warmer. So,
yeah,
but it's so great to hear everybody's stories. Like that's really the best part about taking the pictures at both the Maker Camp and any of the maker events, that you can talk to people about why they make and what they make and how they got into it and the different people they inspire. And
yeah, you have a unique perspective of these events as people come and they spend time with you for a while and you get to meet almost everyone.
Yeah. Right. That's right? The best part. Yeah. Cause everyone else just kind of has to, they don't have really a process to meet everybody, but everybody's kind of now want to come and get my picture. So,
right.
That's really fun.
Yeah. And then you spend enough time with everyone that you actually get to meet them and know them, know what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like us at the swap table, we don't really meet many people because we're just moving people through. So,
Well, and this like this last maker camp was that. I mean, you saw that line; it was insane this year. So, that was probably the longest line that I've ever had.
Yeah, I know. I waited in it for like an hour for the Keith photo, and then we had to step out anyway.
Right. Well, and yeah, I mean, but you guys are VIPs, so you guys should have just jumped to the front of the line.
No, that's not fair. It's not fair. Yeah. But no, it's fun. It's awesome. It's a unique look into all the makers. Like there's people when you start reposting after one of these events, I'm like, I didn't meet half of these people. I didn't even see these people.
You lay eyes on them. Yeah.
Well, and I think the thing that I want everybody to kind of keep in mind when I'm posting the pictures is I'm trying to post at least one or two pictures of each person that I meet. And I'm trying to, you know, also include an anecdote of a story that they told me. And I want people to like comment on them, like, you know, hey, I didn't get your name, but it's great to see your face and like, you know, kind of connect. And, you know, if they want to bust some balls, if they want to, you know, talk about, you know, what a great time they had meeting them. And that's what kind of becomes a little bit of a community for a little bit after the maker camp.
Well, if we're talking about busting balls, I've been to every maker camp so far and you've been there. And I've gotten my photo taken from everyone, but it was only this year that you posted mine.
That cannot be true.
I must not have a face for the Mark Adams.
I am sure that I've posted Instagram pictures page of you before. I'm gonna have to go back.
I'm gonna have to dig back in there and look. I don't think so.
He's definitely got a face.
I don't
for
care
radio.
Either way. I do have a face for radio.
No, so you know what? I'm guaranteed from the first maker camp when you were sitting there, I think you were holding a beer. And I could swear that you were like the perfect character actor for like a street level mobster. And I think that's the one I posted of you. So that was like 4 years ago.
I believe it was Miller Lite.
Not sponsored by Miller Lite, but hey, if you're looking for a sponsorship opportunity.
Yeah. I have those photos, but I don't know if you posted them. Maybe you did.
I'm pretty sure I did.
That was what? Like
I would not let a gem
now?
Like that go unseen by the world.
I'm going to have to go back and look.
Yeah. You should get those printed out and start signing. I'm handing around his headshots. Get you some on-screen work.
What's my name, Craig?
No, Craig prints them out, puts them in frames, and then puts them in bathrooms all across the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah. One time I came out of the bathroom, and he had just put one in there. And I was like, oh, I fixed your photo in there. And he's like, what? And he goes inside, and I don't know if he realized, but I took it and I put it in the urinal.
Well, it's really not a maker camp until you've had a Barefoot Forge story.
Yeah.
Oh, we've all got one of those.
So how was your maker camp this year? Was it, cause you guys were pretty busy over there in that tent.
Yeah, but we had it more streamlined this year. So this was like one of the first years we could do the swap and actually do other stuff. But then with the rain.
Right. Yeah. That rain kind of took, but everyone's attitude was perfect. Like everyone just kind of rolled with it and just took it as an opportunity to hang out and.
It 100% did not ruin Maker Camp for me, but I didn't get to do the things at Maker Camp because of it. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't feel like doing it in the rain. So yeah. I skipped that day. And then on Sunday is basically a wash for us. So yeah, it's fun.
Well, because I always want to see like, so a lot of people that come to Maker Camp, like if they bring something that they make or if they're doing the swap, I kind of want to encourage them to come and take a picture with the stuff they make because so many people don't bring the product that they make. And so,
right.
Like they tell me about it or I have to go on their page, but I don't see it in person and we don't get to talk about it in person.
Yeah. I'm surprised more people don't go with their products and have their photos taken. Like if you're a hammer maker, why not bring one of your hammers and get your photo taken with a hammer?
I mean, occasionally like somebody will come in, but it's usually like, oh, I just got this from like, you know, like if they bought like a Sunset Forge or something like that and they're just like walking around with it. And then I'm like, you know, get a picture with that. But I tried it this year, but I didn't really promote it very well, but I want people to make like a mask for themselves, like a traditional, like a carved mask or like a metal mask or something that is really kind of a personal expression of their face or their personality.
Almost like Jake from Metal Chef Customs.
Well, that's what he was doing this year. So that's the mask that he made, but only like one or two people made them because it didn't really go out that broadly. But I really want people to to do that and just use it as an opportunity to play and make something fun. So for you, obviously, it's going to be bunny ears.
But naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're just a little cute little bunny there.
Here we go. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely make. I wanted to make one this year, and then time got away from me making my swap item, so I didn't. But I have enough time now that I can make my mask now and be ready.
Okay. And you'll be able to rubber cast a dolphin tail for it?
Sure.
Okay.
Good. I don't know what that is, but good. Yeah.
Like a dolphin, you know, like a sea mammal.
Okay.
You know, like Flipper.
I feel like there is an underlying thing here that I don't know, so I will not agree to it until I can look it up.
I just feel like I feel like surrealism would be your way to go. So like a dolphin with bunny ears, I feel like is going to be a perfect.
Okay. What's Tony going to make?
You know, give me a couple of seconds. He seems very much more together, more serious. He seems like the brains of the operation.
I don't know about
he
that.
Is for sure.
Oh, jeez.
Come on, Tony. What are you going to make?
What am I going to make?
What mask would you put on? What would your what would express your personality if you were to make it?
Very blank mask.
It'd be like one of those white scream masks where it's just the eyes cut into it.
Yeah. No, it'd just be a piece of sheet metal, holes cut in it. Okay. That's it.
That would actually be pretty cool.
No shape to it, just flat.
Okay.
Just flat. I think Jake went overboard with his, though.
We got some cool shots of his, though. He was really happy with the shots we got. And the rain looked good because he was all like, his hair was all dripping wet. And so there was like, it looked really like raw and kind of very rock and roll metal, kind of Rob Zombie-ish kind of in the pictures.
It looks like behind the scenes photos of a like a scary movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like a villain. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, but because he isn't that at all. Like he's like every time I photograph him, he's just like super sweet and like, you know, really warm. Want to talk to him. So
he's a funny guy though. I never saw the mask in person.
Oh, really?
At camp. Yeah. So I don't know what it actually looked like.
So he had like steel and I think there was like a copper like nose that was.
That was copper.
Hammer. I think it was copper and steel, and then he had leather straps around the back of the head.
I got to beat him with my mask this year. That's my goal. I don't know what it'll be, this dolphin thing, but I'll make it look cool.
Well, you've only got like 9 months to take care of it, so.
I don't know if you know this, but Tony and I don't move too fast in the shop, so.
Right?
No. Yeah. We're not prolific makers by any stretch.
Yeah. Yeah, but I will make one.
Are you guys having any shop projects going on right now?
No, I just got a new fiber laser, so I've been playing with that.
It's cold up here, so no.
get a nice wood-fired pellet stove in the shop. And
If I had space for it. It's only 12 by 12, so.
Oh, okay.
There is a forge in the corner, so I could use that to heat the place up. But I've just been picking away at just put a new fan on my Fords. That was been a few weeks ago now. I really haven't been out since, picking away at home projects.
Oh yeah. Well, home projects teach you things to use in the shop for sure.
Yeah. I forgot how good I was with a hammer the other day. I was hammering some nails in. I was like, wait a second. This is way easier than I remember.
It's not moving metal.
Exactly.
I mean, technically it is moving metal, but in one direction.
Yeah, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
I get it. So what do you tell us about this?
I was gonna ask you about the fiber labor. What are you planning on doing with that thing?
Well, my wife does jewelry, so she's gonna use it for that. But I wanna mess around with it for other stuff. So I've been making like bottle openers and like those metal business cards and just trying to learn how to use the laser.
Okay.
It's fun. I don't really have an end goal in mind, but these bottle openers are pretty cool, so maybe I'll just keep making those.
Yeah.
People are buying them.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard to kind of practice with something with no specific project in mind. I feel like that's the easiest way to kind of just wander down a path without any goal. But if you've got a project, you're like, oh, I need this, and then you really direct it on it.
Yeah, but this is like an open-ended, like a fun thing. So as far as projects to go with it, like what to do with it, I don't know, you know? I bought a bunch of those like coin blanks. Mm-hmm. I've been making some coins. Uh-huh. And, you know, I'm still learning. So once I figure out how to use it, but then I'll figure out what to make on it.
Okay.
But one of the things I'm going to do, like for those toolboxes I make, is I'm going to put my logo on the handles for each one. So that'll be cool.
Oh, cool. Nice. Now, how long does the toolbox take to make?
I don't know, because I'm only out there on weekends, but...
right.
It's it took me about 8 weeks to make them.
Okay.
Two of them. Uh-huh. 8 weekends, I should say. So however many hours I was out there, I never calculated, but I'm going to go in to make 10 in January. So, well, yeah. So I assume it'll get much faster by the end of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So not that long, but long enough.
Yeah.
Probably too long to make them profitable when I sell them, but
right,
we'll see what happens.
That is, I think that is kind of the problem with the really handmade stuff, that you're only doing like a couple of them and you're not really getting the production benefits of taking like 10 or 20 at a time, because it's so much time saver to do the same process 20 times and then repeat and move on to the next process instead of handcrafting every single one. And
yeah, I definitely don't want to handcraft one at a time, so I'm just going to batch out 10. Mm-hmm. And then if they all sell real fast, then I'll do another 10. But if not, I'm going to move on to the next thing.
Hmm. Well, I look forward to the progress report on your page.
Yeah, it'll probably not till January. But then we got Make What You Fear coming up, which is a competition Tony and I run. So that's going to eat into a little bit of that time. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
Cool.
They'll be out there soon. Soon enough. What about you, Tony?
Me what?
All right. So do you make anything too, Mark, or do you just do photos?
I mean, I make everything that kind of, like if I'm on set or if I'm doing something that I'm doing like product or something, I might have to make a background or walls or the stage elements, prop elements, backgrounds, just, you know, all the things that would be kind of behind the scenes, you know, that might be something I would have to make. But the... prior to last year's Maker Camp, I'd spent like 3 years remodeling a house. So
that's right. Yeah.
Plumbing, electrical, refinishing hardwood floors, sheetrock, tile, landscaping, all that stuff. So lots of skills with the hands.
No bike building in there?
I mean, I do have, I have, 2 running bikes and 4 or 5 not running bikes. Those are in various states of disassembly or reassembly, depending on which one it is. So there's some bike stuff. And then actually, my girlfriend and I just signed up because her birthday was December 2nd, and she wanted something as an experience. So we signed up for a welding class. So we're going to take a welding class at the local community college. So we're going to do that nice couples activity Saturday morning. So
welding is fun.
Yeah. And I've done a very minor amount of it. The community motorcycle garage in Cleveland that I'm part of, they'll have welding workshops and stuff that you can take there. So I've done, I think a MIG one and a TIG one there.
Nice. Now you're going to be making custom bikes.
There's no real money at the pace that I would be making them.
So, well, I mean, for yourself.
Yeah.
Money's no object at that point.
Yeah, right. Cause you know, it's free when you work out the money and you're actually making 30 cents an hour on a bike that you put, you know, 1,000 hours into.
Right.
No, I have plenty of friends that build bikes and they do much, much better work than I would ever do. So I would collaborate with them.
Collaborate with them.
Yeah.
Here's my money.
Yeah.
Well, don't, you know, like that. Some of them, like I'd love to like spend some time in the shop and, you know, kind of be an assistant for, you know, a couple weeks and help them out and kind of learn what it's like to do it professionally and kind of the, because I love seeing people that are very proficient at what they do. I love watching them work and seeing how, you know, the skills that they do and how everything just feels natural in their hands when they're working around something.
Right.
Yeah. I rebuilt a bike. Sorry, I wouldn't call it rebuilt. I reconditioned a bike.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting, that was probably about 3 months.
From. Oh, what kind of bike was that?
It was a Suzuki Intruder.
Okay.
The 1500 model shaft drive. So I took like the final drive off, completely polished it out, pulled all the fenders off, and it's a weird one where the tank is in underneath the seat. So the tank that you see, like,
right, it just holds like the electrics or like the
fuel, yeah, it's the a false oil. It's a false tank. Actually, the carburetor comes up, like the engine comes up in between the tank because the engine's quite tall because it's 1500 cc's. So, and then the bike sits low, so it kind of brings everything together, and then the fuel's back behind you. So it was kind of interesting. Went from a pretty beat up old bike to something that was I was pretty happy with at the end.
Now you still have it or
no, it was one of those things. I got I rebuilt it. I think I ran it for about 2 years and then sold it and went on to something else. I still have bikes, but or a bike, but yeah, I decided to go with something different.
Now you mainly riding dirt or street or
street. Yeah, I've never been. I picked up biking older. Like I was 30 when I started, probably. Okay. Eh, maybe a little younger, but yeah, I was still. And yeah, I just always just driven on the street. So I have tried a little bit of trail riding, but it's like, I mean, go down a loop and come back, like nothing. Never ever go out for a day or anything. I'd love to try it sometime, but
yeah, it's an amazing way to clear the head. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. The street sometimes can be a little painful because you're always watching out for the idiot beside you.
you definitely have to keep your head on a swivel for sure.
Yeah. Wasn't too bad though. I did the trip down to camp this year and that actually wasn't bad. I find it's going to be weird to say, but I find the U.S. roads better. Like it's
really,
the New England U.S. roads.
Yes. I find that like, I only really seem to run across one or two idiots in a trip. So that's good by me considering it's a 600-700 mile trip down to camp and back. So
now which way do you come down from?
I'm coming from the East Coast, Canada.
No, so but down are you coming Maine, down through
Maine, the 95. Okay. It's like the 95, then the 295 through Portland, back to the 95 just after, I think it is. And then like the 495, then the 290, and then the 90, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So the 90 takes me across Mass. So,
and those are all major highways, so they're all pretty good shape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're in really good shape. Lots of tolls to pay.
Right. Well, if you want some more some rougher roads to ride, you should pop over to Michigan and check out their roads because they're a little more challenging.
So I used to... used to work with a guy, he's retired now, but he's done every state. He's hit all 50, no, he's hit the lower 48, sorry. He's hit all the lower 48 and he's hit all 10 Canadian provinces. And he said the one of the worst spots he ever drove was Michigan. And it was on I think he was on the finger of Michigan, maybe. Okay. And he said the wind off the river or off the lakes was so crazy. He said it's the worst driving you'd ever experience. And this guy has done just about everything. I drove, actually kind of a weird story, but we ended up getting caught in a hurricane, like the tail end of a hurricane when it hits the East Coast up here. And yeah, that was a hell of a day. And he said that was nothing compared to what he's dealt with in the States, like in that Michigan area, I think was one of the worst ones.
Yeah. I love traveling by bike. I love the opportunity to like pull over and, as soon as you pull off your helmet, people are asking you about your trip and where you're going, and it's a great way to meet people. Whereas, like, I feel like if you're in a car and you like just get out of a car, people aren't going to like talk to you very much. But they're like, "Oh, you know, family had a bike, or I had a bike,
I miss it."
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I feel like it's really, you know, you get all the smells, and it's not like I never ride very much with music in my ears because I just don't like that at all. I usually just have nothing, just some earplugs. And then so I'm alone with my thoughts and kind of listening to the world go by and smelling it too. Cause if you ride by a dead skunk and it's like, it just stays in your helmet for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It's smell-o-vision for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always found that I didn't realize that was what was going to happen once I got a bike, but once I started doing like the longer trips and people see you with the bags on and all that kind of stuff, they're like, "Oh, where are you going?" Like they're all like hoping to catch this biker on like in this magical journey to some far, far away place or coming back or whatever. And it's definitely a conversation starter, like just in the weirdest places. Like we were in Bar Harbor, which is like a touristy spot one time, And it shocked me, the people that were just coming up and talking about wanting to talk about the mm-hmm. bike when I'm standing right. there beside them. Like, I just expected people to be doing their own thing. Everybody's gone. They come there to shop and that kind of stuff. No, mm-hmm. it was interesting.
Well, cause I rode up into Canada. Cause I like, I don't know, almost 6 years ago now, I was riding across the US and I camped off my bike for like 4 months. Gotcha. And I rode up through Toronto and then up to Montreal, and I pulled into the kind of historic area of Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I just pulled over by the side of the street, and I was just going to park my bike and kind of check the phone to see if there was any place to eat. And these two guys walking by were just pushing pedal bicycles, and they're like, "Oh, where are you going? You know, blah blah." And I'm like, "Oh, we're going to go to this this rooftop restaurant. You want to go with us?" So they just invited me. So I went up, and we had. You know, beverages on the top, and looked over the river and watched the sunset. And then they're like, "Oh, we're going to go get some Chinese. You want to go get some Chinese?" So then I went with them and had Chinese food. And then one guy's like, "Oh, you know what? You know, it's getting late. You can crash in the office in my apartment if you want." So I just crashed with this guy that I literally just met, you know, like 4 or 5 hours before, just cause I was on a bike, and we just started talking just by the side of the street. And then we went out the next morning and had, you know, a beautiful, cafe breakfast and just watched Canada walk by in Montreal. And then I just took off on the bike and rode down through Vermont, and it was just beautiful.
Yeah.
I would never do that.
Which part? Talk to people on the street?
Talk to people.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a trip where I didn't have someone come up to me and just start talking.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It just seems to open people seem to open up to bikers. Seems odd, but yeah.
I mean, it's not kind of like the mystery of the open road. Like, it's kind of the myth of, you know, the road trip. And it's I don't know, it feels like, I mean, motorcycle, the community of motorcycles anyway, like, you know, if you get like a flat tire or something, you're pulled over by the side of the road, motorcycles are going to stop for you. Like, if you're riding a motorcycle, somebody on a motorcycle is going to stop for you. And it just feels really, it's kind of like the maker community in that way. Like, anytime I see somebody by the side of the road, it doesn't matter if they're riding a Harley or an adventure bike, whatever they're riding. If they're having trouble, I'm going to pull over for them.
I got you. Yeah.
When I got my motorcycle license here, they told us, even if you're in your car, if you see a motorcycle, pull over and like they drill that into your head.
Right.
Pull over and ask him. And I did it once, and I won't do it again. They did not want my help.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Well, you know, when you got a face for radio, right. You pull over. Yo, you are right.
So it was the tone of your voice that was.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I just asked if they needed any help, and they told me to get the F out of here. So away I went.
Yeah, well, that's not the normal experience that I've had. So.
I think it was a couple arguing.
Oh, well then, in that case.
Yeah, it was two people, one bike, and I believe they were arguing, having a little.
Got it.
It wasn't an actual breakdown.
Right, so no, it was not a bike issue, it was a relationship issue.
Yeah, but you don't know. You're driving up and see these two people on the side of the road not working on their bike, just standing there.
Right.
Who knows? You know?
And since you're not a licensed therapist, it wouldn't be appropriate for you to help out with that situation.
Correct. Yeah. So that was the one and only time. Off I went.
Yeah.
Well, and then I, you know, you were asking earlier about that trip that I took to Nepal. And so in February, I hopped on a plane, and my buddy Dave from Cleveland took a tour with Motorcycle Sherpa. So if you are looking to tour the Himalayas, either in Nepal, India, or even also in Mongolia, check out Motorcycle Sherpa. They run some great tours.
How long is this tour?
That one, I think it was 10 or 11 days on the bike. Cause you fly. So there's like 2 days of flying. So you're definitely got the travel day. Then you land that night, spend the next day, touring around Kathmandu, to a bunch of different sites. And then you get on the bike the next morning, and then you ride, up into the Himalayas, essentially following the Annapurna Trail. The hiking trail that goes to the Himalayas. And we had 11 riders, and then 4 people with the tour group. So we had people riding with us that were one person leading it, one person kind of running back and forth through the head to the tail, and then one person at the tail, and then two or three people driving trucks, like support trucks. So they would haul all the luggage in one truck, and then they'd haul bike parts in the second truck. So if we had any breakdown stuff, they'd be able to swap out a bike with us or swap tires or whatever you needed. But yeah, Bear runs a great tour. So I always try to really tell people that, you know, if you ever thought about going to Nepal, you should definitely see it on a motorcycle.
Is it all like dirt trails?
No, it's every state of road that you can imagine. So there's from paved to dusty tracks to roads that are literally being cut out of the mountain as you're riding by. So, but just a really an amazing experience, really beautiful countryside, amazing, wonderful people, really great food.
Yeah.
Are these those roads that go up like the side of the mountain and there's just a cliff on one side?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You'd be looking down, you know, 400 to 800 feet just down the side of this hill with no guardrail and this one section we were riding. And this, I think, was like day one. So we were riding paved road and then get into the kind of the hilly countryside. And it's buses, semi-trucks, cars, other motorcycles, scooters, any kind of vehicle that you're seeing. And we're inching along this road and we're having to wait for this basically a single lane bridge that, you know, they'll let trucks go through and then trucks from the other way will come through. And you're looking up at this hill, the mountain that's basically a vertical rock face. And they've got like the scooper, the whatever, the excavators.
Right.
On the side of the hill, cutting out parts of the hill. Like you're looking up and this thing is like 100 feet up on like this ledge that they've cut out and then dropped this excavator on that is just cutting along this hill. It is insane, but so beautiful. But very, very dusty. Like that was the thing that was really the most surprising thing was just because all the construction and all the road work and all the vehicles and everything is just so dusty. So you're definitely bringing a N95 mask is definitely the way to ride over there because it was just, you know, you're breathing it in all day long, but just a wonderful trip.
Sounds amazing.
What are you guys riding for bikes?
His company has bikes that they provide for you. So they're riding the Royal Enfield.
Okay. Yeah, I was seeing kind of an interesting mix of bikes. And I saw the Enfields and it was like, it'd be an interesting bike to take in that kind of environment.
Well, most of those bikes are actually kind of built for that kind of environment. So, because you're not really going to be going that fast. So most of the bikes are smaller displacement. So they're like, bikes were 400cc, I think. But most of the bikes over there are going to be like 125s, 250s mostly. You're definitely not going to need a bike bigger than that because you're not going to be able to go fast on those roads, but having a nice amount of suspension travel that you can kind of soak up some of the bumps, helps quite a bit. But they provide all the bikes, they provide all the servicing on the bikes. So you don't have to, all you got to do is bring your helmet and your riding gear and everything else they provide.
Yeah, no, I was looking at it. It looks interesting. I mean, I remember seeing you when you were on that trip and I was like, wow, that's, it'd definitely be. Cause what got me started biking was, Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman. Yeah,
that's the one that got everybody.
Way round and then long way down.
Uh-huh. Then they have the long way up with the electric one.
So I haven't watched that one yet. I got to find that wherever I can say long way up.
Yeah. I think it was on Apple TV maybe.
Oh, that's why I don't have it.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
my favorite one's the long way around. That was the best one, I think, because it was like such a new thing, and they were kind of hadn't done it before, so there was a lot of discovery, and a lot of those moments were great to see. But yeah, I remember watching that, and
to see what they went through just to get through, and like, I mean, they're doing it from a different place than you or I would be able to do it. Like we wouldn't be able to go to BMW or KTM and say, hey, I'm doing this thing and I need a bike. Yeah. Like it was from a different place, but still to see like the meetings they had to go through and that Russian that came in and from KTM and was like, you won't get through here. And actually they ended up really not getting through that portion because the road of bones in Russia,
brutal. Yeah.
Which they just basically hopped on trucks and went, use the trucks to get through.
Well, yeah, because a lot of those rivers were just washing out so much of the roads that there's just no way to get across them.
Yeah, you got trucks with 40-inch tires on them and 40-inch plus tires on them, and they're pretty much got water running over the hood as they're coming through. So,
right.
You know, there's 6 feet of water there. So, but yeah, no, it was, yeah, that's what got me, was what got me going. And then at one point in time, I thought I would go and buy like an adventure, but then I ended up in the kind of more of the touring side of things. Just realized I'd probably do more of that than bombing down fire roads.
So what touring bike are you riding then?
I run an Indian Chieftain.
Oh, okay.
So it's a bagger, I guess the term they would use.
Right. Yeah, definitely more highway oriented.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I did coming back from camp this year, or not from camp, but from the timber in. Mm-hmm. I did it all in one shot, the 699 miles.
That's a good long day.
Yeah, it was 12 or 13 hours, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I generally don't like to do those long. I mean, I've done them, and
I don't want to do it again, but
yeah.
It was a long day. A lot of time spent riding after dark, which I don't enjoy.
Uh-huh.
Especially like the highways and stuff, like just deer and moose and everything up here, so.
Right. Yeah, no, it's not good to ride after a certain time. I don't generally try to ride in the evening, but sometimes you just got to put the miles in to get to where you're going.
Yeah, definitely.
I've never ridden that far.
No. Well, because I'm surprised, actually. There's quite a few makers that show up to camp, and then you're talking to them, and you find out that they do ride quite a bit. Like, and my thing, unfortunately, like sometimes I can remember your name or your Instagram, but I can't remember both sometimes. So I only know them by the Instagram. Or Clockmore, Ed.
Ed's Clocksonmore.
Yeah. He rides a ton, and he'll ride until it gets, you know, freezing cold, like down into the 30s and maybe even lower than that. And he puts a ton of miles on. But, you know, I will do that occasionally, but I definitely prefer more of the spring, summer, and fall. The deep winter riding, just it's just not enjoyable because, you know, you can't really see as well, and the cars can't see you as well, and everything is wet. And even with good gear, everything's going to be a little damp and wet. So,
yeah, I've got a limit of 10 degrees, but that's 10 degrees Celsius, so it's like probably
70 degrees American.
No
freedom.
It'd be like I think it'd be like 40 or 45 somewhere in there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But like very seldom do I ride when it's even like that's my limit, but I don't choose to ride very often at that temperature either.
Right.
But yeah, I'm
well, it's not just the temp, it's how fast you're riding, and then
yeah, then you got wind chill on top of that, and
yeah, it beats you up real fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why I went with the bagger with like it's got the big fairing and everything, so that's what makes a day like that, like driving from the Blackthorn to home, makes it possible, because you're not as beat up when you get home. So
right, well, because so my longest day on a bike is about 700 miles from Mono Lake, California to Portland, Oregon in a day, and that was on a 250 dual sport with no wind protection. So you can imagine how beat up I was. I had to sleep at like 1 a.m. on a picnic table to get an hour nap because I was falling asleep on the road. And we finally rolled into the house at like 3:30 a.m. And it was just, it was not the best choice, but we had to get the miles.
Yeah, I had that happen one time. We were up in Quebec. We're in the Gaspé region of Quebec. So about 2 or 3 hours east of... well, probably more than that for Montreal, maybe 4 hours east of Montreal. Uh-huh. Anyways, we were coming down through, and I took a wrong turn because at the time I was driving a bike that didn't have like the creature comforts that I have at the moment.
Uh-huh.
And I took a wrong turn, and then we got going, and then we drove for about an hour, and then I was like, I don't think we're going. Like, just things didn't seem to add up. And then,
right.
Then we get stopped for gas, and I looked, and I was like, there was lots of swears. Because it was me and her on it. We'd already done like 200 or 300 K, and I was hoping to get home that day or like that afternoon kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like I only had planned for about a 400 or 500 kilometer day, so like a 300 mile day, 350, and ended up being like, I think I was just shy of like 800 kilometers. Oof. So
yeah,
that was two up as well.
Yeah. So that, and if you're not planning for it, like mentally, if you're not ready, like really, if that wasn't what your plan was, it can be exhausting just to know that you're got hours and hours to go.
Well, that's the thing too, is like the way we were going, like that's the highway we were on was pretty much going through where I grew up. So I knew those roads very well. So I knew like each landmark was like, all right, well, that's another hour. And then, oh, I got, you know, another hour down. You could really, you could tell. It's like, oh. And then it's farmland too. So the wind was just, it wasn't predictable. It'd be going one spot and it'd be blasting you from one side. Then the next time it was coming at you from another side. And it's like, what the? Just, and that bike too was, there was no wind protection. It was a Yamaha Raider. So think of like the, I don't know, like the Orange County Choppers when they come out with the big front, like that custom one with like a big thin front tire and a wider, shorter back tire. Uh-huh. That's what it had. And it was stretched out a little bit. It's not as extreme as like the custom bikes, but that thing was nice on the highway. It was, it just it had no wind protection was the only thing that sucked. Had a big motor and it was just ate up miles, which was surprising for it being a, just without having the wind protection and stuff. Cause we did Newfoundland with it, Gas Bay with it. Where else did we go? Went to Laconia for a bike week with it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I've done probably did more driving with that bike than I have with this one.
Yeah. I definitely want to get up there, up into Newfoundland and Nova Scotia and that whole Eastern seaboard. I haven't spent much time riding up there.
Yeah. Newfoundland is good. Just plan, don't go any later than August. Basically expect winter conditions after August.
Oh, okay.
We were there the second week of August and we were in northern Newfoundland, like up in the St. Anthony, the top peninsula of the top finger of Newfoundland, and we had ice in the puddles in the morning. So it was but then once the sun came up, started to warm the pavement, it was fine, but it was still a little sketchy when you come around that first corner and you go, that's ice.
Right, yeah. So you think June, July is the best months to go?
Basically July. It's just kind of got 1 month of good from what everybody tells me. And then August wasn't bad. It was just a lot colder than what I was expecting.
No, oh, okay.
Like, and I mean, a long trip, you bring rain gear, bring everything. Like, just make sure you're packed.
Right.
But yeah, I haven't really done a Nova Scotia trip, and I'd like to do the South Shore and loop around, come up through Yamhurst and up through, come back up and around that way. I've been to Digby for, there's a Wharf Rat Rally there. That's a nice town. And that northern shore is pretty nice to drive along.
Okay. So do you have a good like motorcycle community where you're at? Like people that you can go ride with or?
Yeah, a lot of the guys I work with are bikers too. So that kind of helps as far as to ride. But when I do these trips, generally solo, I've done a couple, like Dad's come with me for a few trips, but he's, sold his bike since. So yeah, I still enjoy doing the trips by myself. I'd like to be able to do them with other people, but when you're doing those like high mileage trips, it's kind of tough to get people organized.
Get somebody
to
do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's nice to be alone, so you don't have to work with, you know, too many personality conflicts on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do want to do a Vermont trip. That'd be fun.
Yeah. It's a beautiful state.
Yeah. I've been in the New Hampshire, of course, with going to Laconia. Like we did the Kangamangas Highway.
I was just going to ask if you did that one or not.
Yeah, we did that one. And with that one being during bike week, there's actually a photographer on one of the corners. He takes pictures as you're going by.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember. I think I looked at the pictures, but I don't think we bought them. I can't remember. I don't remember them being that great, but I think it was more
look at
me.
Mark's face, not supporting another photographer.
It was more me. It was more me than them.
You may not know it, but photographers, we kind of end up being this kind of lone wolf mentality where it, and I don't know why it is, because I've got a ton of great friends that are photographers, and we don't generally talk about photography because it just ends up being like bitching about, you know, marketing and the work and like, you know, all this other kind of stuff. It's nice to just talk about things, anything other than photography for a while, even though, I mean, I love photography and motorcycles pretty equally. But it's just one of those things where you just end up, you know, kind of squaring off. If you hear somebody else is a photographer in the room, you're kind of like, I don't want to.
Yeah. That one would be pretty thankless, I think, because he's sitting 20 or 30 miles from either end of that highway. Mm-hmm. Like the highway's not the long, like it's, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's 100 miles, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But,
and he had to walk in with all his gear.
Yeah. Well, he was stopped in this one spot. Mm-hmm. I think his car was, you know, a couple hundred feet down, like parked away out of the way. But then he's sitting on a guardrail, mm-hmm. just waiting for bikes to roll by.
Right.
And just taking pictures of the bikes. I was like, man, that's got to be thankless. Like, I don't know how many he's going to get. Some people get them, but man.
Well, there's a guy that he's done on the Tale of the Dragon, Killboy. He's been doing it for years and years. And so he actually hires out a group of other photographers to do the work as well. So I think he's got people at a bunch of different corners now. And so he just, you know, would set up and he would shoot and then put it up on a web gallery and you could just click and order your pictures. And he's always posting stuff about, you know, like you'll see baggers rolling through. And these turns are way too tight for some of the bikes that are going through there. And he'll constantly get, you know, different people just wrecking and sliding off. And they don't generally look like they're going too fast because those turns are pretty tight on a lot of those. But you'll see these baggers with sparks flying off because they're taking the turn super tight. And
yeah.
So those are kind of cool pictures that you'd probably want to get. And I think he makes a pretty good living doing it. So,
yeah. Well, where's Tale of the Dragon? Is Tennessee?
Yeah, it's down in the Blue Ridge.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen all kinds of stuff, but it's one of those things that I do want to go to at some point. But just gotta.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with that though is it's just so busy now that it's got, you know, such a reputation that if you ended up and it was like Miata Club weekend, you wouldn't be able to get good riding in there. With all the people, and depending on the bike that you're on, it's like it's really suited for like more like a 250 or like a 400, because
it's definitely not suited for what I'm driving. And but I've seen people like they'll take a cruiser, and I've seen on YouTube once or twice when I was kind of looking at it, like people taking cruisers and like high speed run of Tale of the Dragon. You see them going, and you just know every time they're going over, it's like, well, there's sparks. Oh, there's sparks. Oh, they probably drug their exhaust on that one. just a mess.
Isn't there a corner on that one that's like
all the bike parts,
loaded up like all the bike parts and car parts?
Yeah. But I've got some friends that kind of ride down that area, and there's like valleys, a couple valleys over, or a couple roads down the road that it's just as nice, but nobody knows about it because it doesn't have the reputation. But you're still going to get the same riding conditions. And, you know, like I've ridden a ton on the West Coast and I love those roads because you get perfect weather. You get, you know, Highway 1, you're looking overlooking the Pacific and plenty of roads in California, Arizona, New Mexico that are great riding roads with no traffic.
Where's your favorite place to ride?
So that trip that I took where I had to come from Mono Lake, a couple of my friends flew out from Ohio. So I was in Portland since I'm splitting my time there, and they hadn't really ridden the West Coast. And so I was like, well, come out, ride it, rent some bikes. And so they rented a couple of bikes out of Portland. And I took them up the Columbia River. So you start from Portland and we rode up to Goldendale and back. And you're kind of riding this road that just runs along the Columbia River, and it's beautiful. And you get the trees kind of closer to Portland, then you kind of get a little bit more into the high desert as you get closer to the to Goldendale, and there's a Maryhill Museum where you stop in there, and they've got like world-class art that you can see. And it's a really a beautiful ride. The only problem I have with that is the wind. So you get, depending on the time of day or time of year, you can get some really nasty crosswinds, but that's really a beautiful ride. Then we rode down to Bend, and from Bend, we kind of rode up over to Crater Lake. If you're familiar with Crater Lake, it's the volcano with the, can't remember what they call them, but the cone fell into Crater Lake. So there's an island in the middle of this lake that's the top of this volcano, and it's a national park. So that's a beautiful ride. So if you're in Oregon or even in Washington, pop down to Oregon, check out that. But there's a ride that we rode from Crater Lake down to Grants Pass, and then from Grants Pass going over to Gold Beach on the coast is this little tiny road that used to be like probably a logging road that they paved, and it's like a lane and a half, and you probably have 4,000 turns in 40 miles. It's ridiculous the amount of turns, and it's not a great road, but it's just so many turns. You're always doing something. And the guys from Ohio, they just loved it. Like every day we rode this trip, because I took them to Gold Beach on the coast, and then we rode down all the way down to just above LA. So we went through Mendocino and Sonoma County and Marin County, and then down below the Golden Gate Bridge. And every time we hit whatever section of road, it was the perfect time of day. The weather was perfect, sunset over the Pacific. And we had the best 7 days of riding that anybody could ever hope for. It was so beautiful. And then from that, we kicked over to like Fresno, and then up to Yosemite, down in Yosemite, and then the backside of Yosemite. If you head down to, I think it's the 120 maybe, that road, it was just perfectly brand new asphalt. And then we ended up staying at Mono Lake. And then from Mono Lake, you're riding kind of the 395 up through California into Oregon. That's another beautiful road. There's just so many roads that if you get off the main road, even like the secondary highways, it's maybe a little bit smaller, and you definitely have a lot more curves and a lot less traffic. So all those roads are great. But when I left California, I got on my bike and I rode and camped off the bike for about 4 months across the US, and just so many beautiful roads, like down near Bisbee, down in Southern Arizona, also beautiful. New Mexico, pretty much any road in New Mexico was beautiful. And just, you know, there's so much. If just get off the main road, just get off the 4-lane highway, get onto the 2-lane road, and you're going to have a great time on a bike.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We, so me and Adam from Uncle Sam Metalworks, we did, he met me for the timber, and we left from, I think it was Auburn, Mass, and we took the 20 instead of taking the 90 and doing the 4-lane thing. We took the 20 and stayed down, keeps you down in the river valley kind of idea. Uh-huh. And that, surprisingly enough, was, I was kind of expecting like the secondary road not to be, I figured it was just going to be like the old highway that was still kind of straight, but no, this thing just rolled along the rivers and through all these different like valleys and stuff. And it was beautiful.
I mean, you definitely, if you're going to do that, you have to, you know, you're going to take two or three times as long to get there, but it's just so much better on a bike.
Yeah, because I mean, from Auburn to camp, like to Blackthorn, should be 3-ish hours. I think we were more like 5 by the time we did the 20, but we stopped a bunch, and you're going through every little town, so you're slowing down to, you know, 30 or lower, dealing with traffic in the towns and this and that, so. It was still nice, though. I enjoyed it. Well,
and the thing that I like, you know, I kind of developed this idea on my trip because I had a kind of a destination because I was going to ride the Route 66 and then go down and ride the Transamerica Trail back. So I was going to go from the West Coast to the East Coast and then the East Coast to the West Coast. And because I needed to kind of clear my head and get you know, just kind of work through some things. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do like 200-300 mile days, you're just going to be cranking away the miles. And I really just needed to kind of just look for a new place to kind of settle down because it was ready for me to leave California. And I was just basically exploring America just on the bike. And so I would just ride along, and if I needed to get off the bike, I would kind of try to find like a secondhand store or a vintage store or something, because it's like a little mini museum of that area, because a lot of it's like locally sourced stuff. So, and they, you know, hang out, get off the bike, walk around, get blood in the legs, talk to people, find out about the local, you know, history or whatever's going on, and just, you know, meet people. And it's just a great way to cross the country, just, you know, one secondhand store at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of enjoy, we did it one time. We went to the trip to Bar Harbor, and we kind of day tripped out from Bar Harbor. We did, just went out, actually did the same kind of thing. We went to, there's like three or four secondhand shops in the area, uh-huh. like, antique.
Yeah. That whole area is real nice. I was just up there, cause Derek, from Malden's, daughter got married up there.
Oh, okay.
And so, he actually, very generously brought me up to shoot portraits at his wedding. So there was a whole other, you know, crew doing the actual wedding photography, but I just set up the set I do at Maker Camp. And, so all the guests at the reception dinner, and then also the, like the rehearsal dinner. So it was just an amazing opportunity to explore Maine and take pictures of people. And, so the Bar Harbor area was just, it was really, really beautiful. But on the drive back to, down to Portland, we kind of antiqued our way down the coast.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think one of the places just closed, but it's because the guy who owned it was retiring. So
okay.
There's Lincoln, Lincoln Tool Library, I think is what it was called. There's one in, there's three or four anyways, but they're all like just, it's amazing what they've got there.
Is that, there's one that's kind of like it's kind of on a side road, not on like the main highway. And it's like a two or three story like building that's just filled with tools.
Yeah, that's the one in Lincoln.
Yeah, because we stopped in there because that was because Lucas recommended we stop in there. And we stopped in a little bit before closing time. So we did not have enough time to really enjoy everything. But wow, like if you're looking for any kind of old antique tool, that's the place to go.
Yeah,
when I was up there, I learned about it while I was up there. Uh-huh. But it was already closed by the time I learned about it. So
no,
yeah.
Well, always make another trip.
I need to.
Yeah,
I don't need any more tools though.
I don't know that there's a maker that's ever said that.
My fingers are crossed.
Right. Says the man who just got a laser.
Yeah, yeah, and I bought a bunch of other tools recently too. So,
anything you want to tell us about?
No, nothing. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fiber laser is awesome though. That's the main thing. Mm-hmm. Playing with that is fun.
Well, maybe you can put it to use on your mask.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, just use it because like that's my main reason for putting that idea out there of like this mask contest is, or not even like a contest, just like a maker mask like thing. It's just think outside the box. Use your tools in a different way. Like just something that's a personal expression. And why not just have a fun project that you're not going to like have any pressure to sell or make money on? Just something that you want to play around with. Like you're a kid again, like a paper mache mask or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I had every intention of doing it. And I have my idea for it. And it's perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put it out there because...
Right, because it's perfect.
It's perfect. So and
we'll see it this next year then. 2024.
But now it may have to be bunny ears and a dolphin fin. So well,
every time you work on it now, the entire time you're going to be thinking that. So.
Yeah.
So I've done my job.
Get my idea done real quick and then do a second one with bunny ears and a dolphin. Is it a dolphin tail is what you said?
I think a dolphin fin? Tail. Yeah. That'll be the earworm in your, like the song that you can't get out of your head.
This is going to be rough. This is going to be rough. Tony, let's thank those patrons real quick. otherwise, we're going to have... Go ahead.
All right. We do have a new one this week. I'll leave that for last. So we'll go here. Corey of Odyssey CNC, Christy of Twisted Twine, Annette of 513 Woodworks, Full Steam Design by Chris Powell, Lillian Archer Photography, David Beckwith Makes, Envy Wood Finery. In our top tier, we have Eastboke Studios, Danelle Smith Christian, Brian Drennan, Lawrence of Maritime Knife Supply.com, Ed Johns of ButtJoints.com, Adam of Uncle Sam Metalworks, Brian Housewort of Workfort Podcast, Matt of Wooden Mustache, Brad of Brad's Customs, David and Joanna at Wido Works, Chad of Chad's Custom Creations, Ryan of Gnomehammer Forge, David of DW Wood Builds, Matt of First Do Construction, and Daniel and Drizzy. And then new this week, well, I apologize, it took us, Patreon is a bit painful sometimes, and I didn't notice, but we have a new one that was, I think it's been a few weeks back, but it's Steve Burns, and it's all I got for handles, so.
That's all right.
Thanks for
joining
us.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks to all the patrons.
So, yeah.
So, getting back to Mark, did you ever read that full book yet?
I did. I finally, when I got it back to Cleveland, I opened it up, and I mean, there was no way I was reading that in front of everybody. It would be like an ugly cry. There'd be no forgetting that. Everybody, you know, did such a wonderful job talking about, you know, what the pictures mean to them and what Maker Camp means to them. And it's such an honor to be a part of the community and be an unexpected part of the community. And, you know, cause it's just such a random connection to Jimmy and all those guys from the Lincoln event. And then to end up being invited, you know, when Maker Camp was starting to be invited up there and to kind of that first year was just kind of, it was like a subway busker asking for change, dragging people in to get a picture taken because they, you know, because there wasn't any kind of precedent for it. And so they just gave me the freedom to do whatever I wanted. And just it ended up being just such a magical, wonderful thing for me.
Yeah. I actually recently went back to my photos from that event and I have a lot of you doing your thing in there. Like when they brought the lathe in. Mm-hmm. You guys were doing like the lathe turning and you were taking photos.
Right, with Pat
like,
and I think Jimmy was there and Derek Walden and everything, yeah.
And then I got one of you doing some soft sawdust angels after that with Tamara.
Oh, yeah.
Tamara, I don't know how to say her name. It was funny.
Yeah, no, those are some of my favorite pictures, the ones of her laying in the sawdust. And it's just like, it is such a great opportunity for people to just, you know, because I'm taking the pictures for whoever's in front of the camera, so I never want to really guide people too much and I want them to do whatever they want. So obviously, you know, the person last year, not this year, but last year, Craig came in, I think with 13 different outfits. So, you know, he's a
clown.
He's a monster in front of the camera. I always love the energy he brings to the set and he's so encouraging for everybody to have a good time. So that's, one of the things that I want people to always understand that they can come in and do whatever they want. They can bring props. They can, you know, they can be serious. They can be, have a smile and a laugh or whatever they want.
You won't take my photo unless I smile.
That's not true. Again, I feel like you're painting me into a very specific corner here.
Yeah.
I mean,
what you did this year, you made it very uncomfortable for everyone. Everybody wait, just staring at me until I started laughing.
Well, when I print out the 8-foot tall black and white picture to promote the photos, I'll try to make sure to pick one of yours.
Please don't.
yes do.
You'll have nobody in your booth. Oh man, no, but it is a good time. It's amazing what you've done to like unintentionally promote the Maker Camp by what you do. I think you're the number one promoter of it just based on these photos, which is cool.
I mean, what the event has become for everybody. And you know, I think the first year, my impression was it really felt kind of like a spring break for makers. Cause like they could be around other makers instead of like being the one blacksmith in their town. Then, or the one, you know, woodworker who's working out of their garage in their neighborhood, everybody talks about what they do and they're so encouraging and it's just such a wonderful like recharge of energy for the year. So I really look forward to it every year. As soon as I finish and I'm packing up my gear, I can't wait till the next year to happen. Even though, I do. I'm working on my cardio, so I'm trying to get back and working out regularly because I need to build up the endurance and the stamina because some of those 15-hour days are a little long. So got to work on the core to keep the back safe.
I really don't know how you do it, 15-hour days. Well, on your vacation, no less.
Yeah, that's my vacation. I love it. I really, you know, because I can't sit on a beach. I can't sit by a pool. That's not anything I'd ever want to do. So it's either going to be a motorcycle trip or taking pictures of people. So I think
In your actual work as a photographer, though, are you ever spending 15-hour days doing it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, because what people don't necessarily understand, like if I'm working on location, I've got to get the gear packed up, loaded to the location, unloaded to the location, set up, shoot, unpack it, and then either take it back. And if I'm shooting the next day, it's got to be unpacked and reordered for the next day if it's a different kind of shoot, or it's got to be unpacked to be stored, or depending on what the weather conditions are, maybe it's got to be dried out. So it's pretty routine that it can be, you know, a very long day. It's never a quick day.
Right. But at least in those instances, it's packing, unpacking, and shooting. At Maker Camp, you unpack on Thursday and then you shoot for 15 hours a day for 3 days straight.
Yeah.
And then you shoot for about 8 hours on Monday.
Yeah. Well, because I definitely want everybody who's like doing the presentations, I want them to be able to get pictures because I know if they're busy in their tent, they're not going to be able to get out and get a picture. And so I really want everybody who's there. I don't care if you're working it, if you're not working it, if you're just stumbled into the event, if you want a picture, if you get in front of my camera, I'm going to take your picture.
Yeah. I went for the Keith photo, the League of Keiths or whatever they call it. And then I waited till Monday to go back over. Cause that line was ridiculous.
Yeah. It was, I kept looking up and no matter how fast I would move, it was still insane. And you know, it's an honor that people are willing to wait for that. And then I want everybody who steps in front of the camera to never feel rushed. I want them to get the pictures that they want to get. And I want to hear their stories. I want to talk to them. I don't want to make it into like a fast food restaurant where you just like, you know, show up and get a click and walk away. I want you to feel like I've spent as much time and as much energy on each single person.
Well, that's how you get the good photo. If it's a step and repeat, no one's going to want to just post that photo.
Right. Well, and this year I try to change it up a little bit every year, so that they feel each year has a little bit different feeling. So, this year I doubled up on everything. So I had two backgrounds, two lighting setups. And that kind of gave me about six different places that I could shoot somebody for. So the light would be different angles, different feelings, like more contrast, flatter, more of a beauty light, more of a dramatic light. So it was kind of a technical challenge of me. But it was also something because I wanted people to feel like if they got a picture last year, they also wanted one this year because it was going to be a completely different feel.
Right. I got a sneeze. It's coming. I apologize. It's cool. How many more years until we get a color photo from Maker Camp?
I don't think that's going to happen because everybody looks good in black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that's not happening. That's why I was asking.
I mean, I feel like, because it's, I feel like I'm going to change it up. You know, it might be, you know, contrastier or a little like different styles, but I think the black and white, I really think everybody looks good and you can see them all together. So when you put them into a book or something, or if you put them on your Instagram page, like my page, all the pictures that are black and white, you know, they're a portrait, and all the color ones you're going to see on there are going to be most likely be motorcycles.
Right. So,
but I, you know, I also feel like it also has a timeless quality to it. Like it feels like something that is separate from the pictures that people take with their iPhones. And so it kind of gives it a little bit more of a timeless picture that you can look back and really remember that moment as distinct from that day.
Yeah.
But the book that they put together, it took me totally by surprise. That was really a very generous, both in time and effort and energy and planning. And it was really amazing. I can't say thank you enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is a nice camera that you have.
I mean, it does 90% of the work. So, because I could just let that camera just lay on the floor and it would take all the pictures I take. So,
all the great photos. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really the secret people don't know, is that the camera does all that work.
Yep. All of it.
Yes.
Yeah. We're being sarcastic, folks.
Yeah, that's right. That
I
was,
don't need any hate humor. Mail for that.
I can't believe makers would send you hate mail for that.
Well, makers love to send me hate mail. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
They don't bother me, though.
I think they're scared they're going to get thrown in the duck pond, Tony.
Oh, that'll never happen.
So now, because you guys are always over in the other tent over there, do you guys get out and are you able to participate in the workshops or the classes or anything? Or
some.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of put an effort this year to go to more classes. I ended up doing okay. I got to a few things. I don't know. I would always just socialize during the day too. It was weird. And then I always waited till like the open forge time and then I'd go over there and play. But then this year I decided to like just kind of push myself and do different things, like not my wheelhouse kind of stuff. So
right.
That was good.
So did you do any like the plastic stuff or like little total boats for the boat thing or?
No, I did the spoon carve, the picture frame, and there was something else I thought.
Did you do tool restoration? That was pretty popular with everybody.
No, I don't know if I even went into the, I wanted to, but I never went in, I don't think. I feel like there's something else I did and I can't think of it right now.
The Camp Arrowhead?
Oh, yes, that's it. The flint napping.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted
the timber end project. What's that?
Yeah, the timber end was. Yeah. I'm always impressed by when they put those things together. That it always it becomes this massive monolith of just craftsmanship, and it's really beautiful.
I was amazed that this year was like what 2.5 hours they erected that structure.
Yeah, I mean, because weren't they? Because they knew it was going to rain, so I knew that, and they knew they were kind of rushing to get that done. So.
I think the plan was to do it Saturday morning, and I'd gone to the timber inn, like I was a part of the timber inn over the summer, and I had talked to Justin Dietrich on Thursday, and he's like, yeah, we're going to do it Saturday morning when everyone's here, blah, blah, blah. And then I think the gravity of the rain started to set in
right
on Friday, and he came over and he's like, are you willing to help us today? I know you have to do the swap entries, but we're going to put it up today. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you mean you're going to finish it today or start it today? And he's like, no, we're going to put it up. It shouldn't take us too long. So we went over there and in 2.5 hours, it was up.
Cause I mean that, I don't think anybody expected that rain to be as crazy as it was.
No.
Well, nobody,
I mean,
wanted,
I knew it was going to rain all day.
Nobody wanted it to be that crazy. That's for sure. Right. Everybody's like, so holding out hope. But it's like, oh, you know, it won't be that much rain. Then we're standing in 6 inches of water.
My opinion of it is if it's going to rain during Maker Camp, let it rain. Like, let it do that so it's an experience as opposed to just light drizzle to make your day miserable. Mm-hmm. At least that's memorable.
Well, because I grew up in the Northwest, so a light drizzly rain is like 90% of me walking to school. So it's pretty, it is miserable, but it is also pretty comfortable too.
Yeah.
But when I was looking at the top of the like the area that I shoot at, it has like that wooden floor. So, but up by the where they have the stage and the karaoke and stuff, I mean, about a third of that floor was covered in water at some point. And it kept creeping down and creeping down, and I was about to start like putting my power packs up on plastic bins and stuff to get it up there. But they ended up doing a great job digging some trenches and putting in some hay bales and getting it diverted a little bit. So.
It was amazing. The Gator Boys showed up and just started digging.
Yeah.
And it was like, it just stopped all the water. It was amazing. It's crazy to me that they're that set up for that type of thing. Like if it had been an event somewhere else, it wouldn't have been handled. Like we would have just been, you would have been washed out.
Yeah. So now are you guys doing the, anything like there, are you doing like doing the next, like I know they've got a lot of classes during the years, like the hammers and the timber stuff. And then I know they're doing a shoe making thing, leather shoe thing with 21 grams. And
Ethan.
Kurgs, I think, is doing silversmithing this year.
Yeah, I'll be at the Kurgis one.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking about doing the epoxy one.
Okay.
I'll definitely be at the hammer inn.
Mm-hmm. So basically all of them is what you're saying is you're going to.
I'll be at the timber inn.
Because how far away are you from Blackthorn?
3 hours.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, I just got back from the Blackthorn this morning. I was up there yesterday.
Oh, okay. So. I think somebody there were a bunch of people up there, right? Was there a thing?
No, I mean, it wasn't a maker camp thing at all, but the Blackthorn ran a bar crawl. So we went up there and did the bar crawl.
There was drinking at the Blackthorn? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's very rare. I mean, it's a pretty dry place, but
it seems like it. I thought it was a dry county from what I've experienced.
Yeah, it's pretty tame up there. So
dry county.
Yeah. It was a good time. Are you doing the group forge, Tony?
That's the plan.
Because when's that this year?
April.
Oh, okay.
April 5th through the 7th.
Yeah,
that's you gonna go, Mark? Actually, swing a hammer. Leave your camera at home.
You know, it's definitely tempting. I do always threaten to do something like that, but then it just kind of gets away from me.
I will bring my camera and take photos of you working. How's that sound?
Wow, that's a very generous offer. I'm sure your camera would do a wonderful job.
It would do a wonderful job. It's a very nice camera.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I'll hand it to you. You can set the settings, and then I'll step away and
right.
take photos of you.
Nice. So, do you know what the plan for the hammering is going to be? Because they did the fire pit and they did the bench, and then
it's going to be I guess it's a
fire rack, right?
A log holder, like a rack, like a log rack, but it's going to replace and use parts of the old wagon that's there, I think is the way Chris was talking. Because I was talking to him at camp.
Mm-hmm.
He said something about using, it's either using or replacing the old wagon that's there. And I assume he's going to be using some of it, like, because there's some good parts on that that would be kind of fun to keep.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be an interesting project.
Yeah, because everything always looks great whenever it comes together, because it's always a surprise when you show up, and if you haven't been a part of it, to see it in person. And I think obviously based on the weather in early October, the fire pit is a very popular place to be in the evening.
Definitely a fun spot to be. There's one there, and then there's always one over by Will and them with the pits.
Right. Yeah. And they do such a great job with the barbecue. It's always such an amazing time to eat that food. They spend so much time and energy with that.
Yeah, he does. That's for sure. Well, they, I guess there's a group of them that do it. But.
Oh, yeah. Big team. Yeah, for sure. Everybody. I mean, I think that's the thing about the whole event. It's just such a team effort, and everybody, you know, lends a hand. If anybody needs any help, then everybody's always jumping in to help with somebody else.
Mm.
And that's what I try to, you know, as an unofficial promoter of the Maker Camp, you know, I do try to tell people of the magical memories of the community effort there.
Yeah, we're unofficial promoters too, and we try as well, but it's hard to explain unless you've been there.
Right. No, and it is, it is a magical weekend. It really is just an amazing time. I think I've never had a bad moment there. No matter, you know, if the weather's cold or whatever it is, it's nothing. Yeah. Everything is always rewarded by whatever effort you put into it.
Well, that's the thing too. Like, it's hard to explain to someone that, yeah, there was 6 inches of rain in an hour on Saturday, but yeah, it was a great weekend. Everybody would think that would wreck it completely.
You know, right. And it just made a story. It just made it like that was the year it rained. Whereas like, you know, another year, something else happened.
Well, maybe we'll have a year that it snows. Who knows?
Oh God. And then everybody gets frozen in and they don't plow the roads and we get to stay through the week.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun.
It would be fun for us who have rooms. If you're camping, that would be miserable.
It would be miserable. Well, I know some of the people that were in the rain on the camping, they were, you know, their tents got a little wet. So,
yeah, I don't think there's many tents that are meant to deal with like being washed away.
Yeah.
I mean, 6 inches of rain, that's like. How much rain actually dropped? Did anyone ever look up the total rainfall?
Yeah, I don't know what the totals were.
It had to be inches per hour, though, right?
I mean, it definitely, you know, they really, it really packed it in. But then even if the heaviest rain, it just kept consistently going for so much longer, even after that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was interesting. But with that, I say we close it out, head on over to the after show. What do you guys say?
All right.
Works for me.
If you ever wanted your own portrait, the black and white portraits, just sign up for Maker Camp and come and get in line and get one from Mark. It is a phenomenal time, or find him at any of these other Maker events that he does. If you don't already follow him, he's Mark Adams Pictures on Instagram, right?
Yep.
Are you on TikTok?
Oh God, no. I don't dance like you do. I don't have your moves.
Nobody has my moves. That's why I'm so prolific on TikTok. But yeah, definitely give him a follow if you don't already. I don't know why you're not. He does some phenomenal stuff. Find him at the next Maker event. He's coming to the Group Forge to actually forge, so you can come watch him there.
I don't know about that. We'll see. I don't know what my schedule looks like. It's a little far out.
He's shaking his head no, but we're going to get him there.
Right. And if you run a Maker event, you know, contact me and see if you want to bring me to your event. So, because I'm really shocked. Like, there's a lot of, like, I feel like people, like, you know, I'm very approachable. You know, DM me, talk to me if you want to ask me any questions. You know, I feel like it's really funny sometimes because every single person I meet has the same kinds of statements, and I think a lot of makers are just like me. Like, you know, I'm a little bit more introverted and shy and quiet than you might suspect. But professionally I have to be an extrovert. So it's not my natural instinct to go talk to every single person at an event, but you know, I seem to have developed that kind of professional personality. But it's mainly just because I want to hear the stories. So I just want to meet people and hear what's important to them. So
it definitely works. Definitely reach out to him. It's worth it. If you want to find Tony, he's at Woodland Iron. I'm at Blackthorn Concepts. Both of us are at Working Hands Podcast on Instagram. If you want to rate and review the show, 5 stars is always appreciated. And we're going to go to the after show. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Later.